Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Our next guest is a Jesuit guy, so he's been exposed to logic and postdoc, ergo, propter, hoc, and maybe it follows, maybe it doesn't. But Tommy Stadanovich, owner of Drago's, if that was Drew Brees' first meal, you can't go wrong making that Tyler Shuck's first meal, can you? How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, but I got to stop you for a second.
Yeah.
I went to Jesuit for 1 year, and they weren't very fond of me, so I ended up becoming a Rummel Raider. And I am so proud of being a Rummel Raider with a lot of Raider pride. But my two boys did go to Jesuit, so let's get that
correction,
out of the way.
Correction taken. And look, let me tell you, I know they're fond, and I don't want to make this about high school, they're fond of Jesuit of saying, you know, this mayor sat there, this judge sat there. They might not saying that about Tommy Stadanovich, but he's a pretty successful SOB. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're good with it. And my brother went there. My nephew's there now. My boys went there and all of that. I'm proud to be a Rummel Raider. But anyway, let me tell you, he walks in the restaurant the other night just by chance, by himself. One of my managers recognized him, introduced him to my brother, who was having dinner with our Uncle Johnny and a couple guys. And then next thing you know, Tyler's sitting with my brother, then my mom, and another person comes in. Now we've got a 10 top sitting in the dining room. He sat with us. He came in for a quick little dinner. He ended up sitting for a couple, 3 hours. Let me tell you something. If this guy can throw touchdowns and run a football team the way his personality works and how nice he is and how sincere he is about wanting to be a New Orleanian, dude, we're in for a really, really good quarterback and a nice young man. And what a pleasure it was to talk to him the other night.
Tell me about the Shuck jokes. There had to be a lot of them.
Well, you know, it was funny because my mom said, "Well, how do you pronounce your last name?" And then my brother goes, "Mom, you know how you shuck an oyster? Shuck, you know." And so, yeah, we talked about it a little bit. You know, he doesn't eat. Growing up, he didn't eat a lot of seafood. He's from Arizona originally. Mm-hmm. And he was like a meat and potatoes kind of guy. And I got to tell you, it was really, really cool. You know, he ate a few oysters, and then we're starting to talk about what we're going to serve and this and that. And he said, "Can I get some more of those oysters?" I said, "I know who got it. Yes, sir, we can get you some more oysters." So he loved the oysters right away. He had three types of shrimp. He loved it. At the end of the day, he could not, even if he didn't like seafood, he could not have been nicer of a person. He's looking forward to working out. He had a chance, just by chance, Coach Summerall from Tulane was there, and they had mutual friends, so they kind of talked a little bit, which was nice. I got to tell you, this kid is really looking forward to being not only a New Orleanian, he wants to be a Houdat. And yes, he already knew that it's Nawlins, not New Orleans. So he knew that before he even walked up to the table. He's looking forward to having his wife come in town. I think she comes in this weekend. I told him that, look, if it's not raining, you got to go to Jazz Fest. Mm-hmm. He's just ready. He's just raring to go.
So real quick, I mentioned the Latin, you know, the connection, the logic connection there. Tell me the Drew Brees story connection.
Well, Drew Brees' first dinner in New Orleans was with Sean Payton, and it was in our restaurant at Table 50. And when Drew did his goodbye video to the city when he retired, he actually came back to our restaurant with Miss Benson, and he did a tour of the city that day of some of the, you know, his iconic spots, and he included us, which was very, very nice. So, this is, you know, Tyler Shuck's first meal in New Orleans, because he was only he came in that afternoon. Hopefully he's going to have, I'm very superstitious. You know, I'm a typical Houdat, so I'm superstitious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe this guy's going to have the same type of career like Drew Brees. I can bring us a Lombardi. I'm all in.
Whatever it takes. Thank you, Tommy Stadanovich. A pleasure as always.
Take care. Always nice talking to you. Y'all have a great day. Stay dry.
You got it. Go Eagles. Tommy Stadanovich, owner of Eagles. I'm a Shaw guy. We'll talk to Keith Spear about Jazz Fest when we come back on WWL. 8:18, seems like we wait all year for it, and then before you know it, it's May, the second weekend of Jazz Fest. Keith Spear is here to talk about it with us, reporter for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. How you doing, Keith?
I am ready for weekend two.
Man, it seems like just yesterday was snowing, doesn't it?
It's amazing how that happens.
It is.
Hey,
let me ask you real quick. I was uptown on Monday evening. I saw a big crowd outside of Tipitina's. What was going on there? Do you know?
That was Trombone Shorty's big benefit concert for his foundation.
Okay. A lot of people were on the neutral ground, I guess, for the overflow or whatever. They listened through the doors. Is that what happens?
No, there's an outdoor element to the event where they induct musicians into the Tipitina's Walk of Fame on the sidewalk outside of the club. And so there's a free kind of street festival outside, and then you pay to go inside the club.
That's what it looked like. I didn't know what it was, but I knew you would know. Let's talk about the lineup today. And I know Santana's a headliner. I got a text saying something about Santana or Carlos Santana having COVID. I don't know if that's true or not. What have you heard? What do you know?
Well, he had actually canceled a couple of shows a week or two ago, and I think was taken to the hospital as a precaution. They were saying at the time it was dehydration, but as far as I know, he's good to go today for the festival. They've certainly not announced anything to the contrary. And, you know, Carlos has a long history with Jazz Fest, so I think he will do everything in his power to make it out to that stage this afternoon.
Who else are you looking forward to today? Highlights.
You know, that last slot is kind of fun. I mean, it's Santana, it's Cage the Elephant on the Gentilly stage, and it's Morris Day and the Time on the Congo Square stage. But right ahead of Cage the Elephant, you got Better Than Ezra, who, you know, believe it or not, this is the 30th anniversary of Elektra Records releasing Deluxe, Better Than Ezra's breakthrough album, you know, which went on to sell a million copies and was one of the biggest selling albums ever by a New Orleans rock band. So, you know, they're going to be kind of celebrating that anniversary out there. Right before them, David Shaw, the singer from The Revivalists, is playing with his solo band. And you may have heard The Revivalists did a pop-up show on Tuesday night at Snake and Jake's in the courtyard behind Snake and Jake's, that the infamous Uptown Dive Bar. So that was a lot of fun to see those guys in like a small setting like that.
Before you move on, any other pop-ups that happened that you know of? Or that might
happen? Only one that I know of that I went to, you know, and it was fun because it was in the courtyard behind Snake and Jake's. There were probably maybe 200 people that were in there, you know, and 2 days before, the Revivalists played to, what, 25,000 people on the main stage right in front of the Dave Matthews Band. So that contrast is kind of neat to see.
That is one of the untold stories of Jazz Fest, or one of the cool things that kind of flies beneath the radar, the pop-ups.
Yeah, last year, you know, the Killers did a show at Tipitina's the night before they played at the festival, which was a lot of fun. And, yeah, it's one of the things that makes it such a special time of year. And I think bands love doing that. I mean, they know it's special. They know it's special for the fans. It makes for great social media posts, you know, see a big band playing in a little bitty club like that. So, yeah, that's definitely part of the fun.
Let's talk about tomorrow, because I'm looking at the bottom of the cube. And, of course, they got a lot that goes on before that, but pretty interesting lineup there, too.
Yeah, it's the second Friday this year where they've had like a classic rock country dichotomy going on at opposite ends of the fairgrounds. You know, you've got Luke Combs playing on the main festival stage, and then Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, who have never performed Jazz Fest before, closing out on the Gentile stage. Then you've also got, you know, the Wailers with Julian Marley, Joshua Redman, great jazz saxophonist, fabulous Thunderbirds, who have been around for Clifton Chenier, the celebration of the Clifton Chenier Centennial, which has got all kinds of people on it over at the Fado Do stage. So, yeah, really good Friday lineup, for sure.
Yeah, Irma Thomas tomorrow as well, and I just think she is a treasure, man. I'm going to tell you what, I know her personally. I've been involved in a couple of fundraising things that she's done, and Irma Thomas is just solid gold.
Absolutely, absolutely. And tomorrow is a special show for Irma. It's not her regular show. It's her gospel show in the gospel tent at 3:45. So that's a whole other level of special because she gets so emotional when she knows that gospel stuff. I mean, I've seen her break down in the gospel tent before, and it just, you know, takes the whole crowd with her. So it's a really cool thing to see.
I think age is just a number, and I'm going to tell you what, she sounds good today as she does ever. That's a very talented woman. Quick break, let me sneak in, Keith, then we'll come back and talk about Saturday and Sunday, 8:23. Talking about Jazz Fest with Keith Spira, final weekend. If you got any questions, comments, the Okanagan Jeweler text me line, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along when we come back. Right now, traffic, WWL. 8:28, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly back to Keith Spira, reporter for the Times, speaking of New Orleans Advocate, second weekend of Jazz Fest. I get a text here from somebody, two different texts, same number, looking to check out the 15-year-old piano prodigy River Eckert at the Blues Tent on Saturday. And then another text that says from the same person, River Eckert is the next big thing to come to New Orleans. I don't know if that's a family member of River Eckert or not, but what do you know of him, Keith?
Yes, his dad is a musician, so he kind of came up in the tradition. And, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are talking about him. He played at the WWOZ piano night the other night at the House of Blues. So, yeah, a lot of people are definitely talking about him. He's got a lot of buzz, for sure.
Like a Harry Connick Jr. kind of thing?
Kind of in that ballpark. I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, Harry first played the Jazz Fest when he was 9. Mm-hmm. And so River didn't get out there quite that early, but he's doing a good job.
Now let's talk about Saturday's lineup.
Big band, obviously, Pearl Jam, coming back to Jazz Fest for the third time. You know, always a fun show out there. I should say something about Ledisi. She is the contemporary R&B singer who was born and raised in New Orleans, moved away to California, but she is doing her Nina Simone tribute over in the Jazz Tent to close out Saturday. And she's got an amazing voice. And when she does the Nina Simone stuff, it's absolutely beautiful.
And then Sunday, weather should be good. What are we looking for?
You know, I love the fact that they booked Lenny Kravitz back-to-back with Trombone Shorty. Years ago, Trombone Shorty toured the world for the first time as a member of Lenny Kravitz's horn section. So I'm sure they put those guys back-to-back with the thought that one or the other will sit in with the other guy's band. So that'll be one of those kind of cool Jazz Fest moments if it happens.
Real quick, thunderstorms forecast maybe for today, definitely tomorrow.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Oh, and Saturday, what would hint would you give people to deal with that, Keith?
You know, wear shoes that you don't care about, bring some sort of rain poncho and possibly a small umbrella, and just go with the flow, you know? I mean, unless it's lightning, the music's going to go on. I mean, I remember years ago, Billy Joel, they were squeegeeing water off the top of his piano. It was raining so hard on the stage. But the show went on. So
thank you, Keith.
Know, you just got to go with
Appreciate it.
Okay, Tom.
As always, Keith Spira, reporter of the Times, speaking to you, New Orleans Advocate. Text me with your Jazz Fest thoughts, 504-260-1870. Do you go? Have you gone? And if you could make it better, what would you change about Jazz Fest? Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:45, quarter till 9, May 1st. LSU baseball ranked number 2 nationally. Now's the time of year. Although the season extends a long time, Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Let's talk about these LSU baseball Tigers today, how they compare to what we saw, I get back, what, February, I guess, when the season started, right?
Well, this has been a you know, we went into the season thinking that this could be a really good team. We talked about the depth, that there was it seemed like they had a lot of different options. There were some question marks, but I would say a lot of the question marks have been answered. Like, you know, for instance, guys like Derek Curiel and Daniel Dickinson, can they, you know, for Curiel, a lot of hype about him as far as incoming freshman, can he live up to the hype? And he's done that and probably even more. Daniel Dickinson was great at Utah Valley, but can he be great at LSU? And I think he's been fantastic. And then I think they've also gotten some performances that have exceeded expectations. Chris Stanfield, I don't think anybody would have thought at the beginning of the season he'd be hitting 329 on the year. Or a guy like Ethan Frye, who has the third best batting average on the team at 343 and is tied for third for most home runs on the team with 8. I mean, certain things, especially offensively, the position player-wise, has really panned out very well for LSU. And then Cade Anderson has lived up to the role of being a Friday night starter. Anthony Ianson, while he'll allow some base runners to get on base, maybe walks too many guys at times, still has been a really good number two starter. And then I think what Cason Evans and Zach Collin have done for them out of the bullpen, I mean, those guys combined 29 appearances between the two, and they each have an ERA near one. I think that has been the difference maker for this LSU baseball team, that they've been able to count on those two guys when they have a slim lead, or if it's a tight game, they can put those two guys into the ball game, and they just put up zeros. Now, Evans is starting to transition more into a starter's role. We'll see, but still, those two guys have been huge difference makers for this team, and I think they're a big reason why LSU's 37-9 overall and 14-7 in the Southeastern Conference.
Let's talk about Texas A&M heading over to College Station and a series that starts tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow night, you know, Texas A&M, you want to talk about expectations, you know, going into the season, they were ranked number one, preseason number one ranked team, and they got off to an awful start. I mean, they started 1-9 in the SEC play, and they also had a bunch of losses in the non-conference portion of their schedule before league play started. A couple weeks ago, they swept a doubleheader from Tennessee, and it looked like they were starting to turn things around. They swept South Carolina. They won a series against Arkansas. But then last weekend, they got swept by Texas, who was ranked number one. Now, all three games, though, were decided by one run. So they were right there with them. So this is still a very good Texas A&M team. And when you talk to, you know, the national college baseball analysts out there, they say, hey, you can't look past this Texas A&M team, even though their conference record doesn't look very good at the moment. They're 8-13 in league play because they got a lot of talent. And it is starting to come together for them. You know, for LSU, they got to make sure. I think for Texas A&M, they come into this series, they're going to be hungry, because not only did they get swept last week by Texas, but you got 9 conference games left, and A&M is trying to make a push here. And the best way for them to make a push is win this series against LSU, then they play Missouri, who does not even have a conference win this year, and then they'll finish up the regular season after that. But Texas A&M, I think the biggest struggle for them is just they've lacked consistency at the plate as a team. They're only hitting 271 on the season. And that's been their struggles. And they had a hard time scoring a lot of runs in that series last weekend against Austin. So it'll be up to LSU's pitchers once again to try to shut them down and see if LSU can get a series victory on the road in College Station.
All right, we'll pick it up. We come back talking to Jeff Palermo about LSU baseball. Got all the action for you here on WWL. WWL.com columnist is Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Network News Director. The Oakland Orange Jeweler text me line, 504-260-1870. If you got any questions, comments about LSU baseball, I'll pass them along. It is time for traffic now on WWL. 8:56, 4 till 9, WWL, of course, your home for LSU baseball. Up next for the Tigers, 3-game series at Texas A&M all starts tomorrow night. Tigers taking on the Aggies at 6 p.m. on WWL, streaming live on the free Odyssey app. Game 2 Saturday at 2, Game 3 Sunday at 1. You can hear all the action here on WWL. Go Tigers! Tommy Tucker talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. So, Jeff, we got Texas A&M this weekend. Then you play Grambling on the midweek game Tuesday night. Then a series with Arkansas. Then a series with South Carolina. Then it's time for the SEC tournament. How is that going to be different this year with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma?
As far as the SEC tournament, well, it goes down to a single elimination tournament. And I'm not really that – I'm not a big fan of that. I always thought what was great about the SEC tournament was the double elimination. And if you lose that first game, having a chance to kind of fight your way back, it always made for some fun games. And
Well, that managed the roster too, right? And manage the roster, too, which I think is part of baseball, Jeff.
Yeah, it is.
If you get on that losing side, I'm saying.
Well, one of the things they've done, too, is all 16 teams get to go. Last year when you had 14 teams in the league, 12 of the teams got to go. And I'm also not a big fan of having every team go. I mean, Missouri, they're 0-21. They don't deserve to go to the SEC tournament. I'm sorry. South Carolina, they've won 5 games. You're not very good. Let's not waste everyone's time here. Let's move along and really have the best teams. But I think from the coach's perspective, though, this is the way they probably look at it, is especially in someone in Jay Johnson's shoes, is this has been such a grind going through this 30-game conference schedule. I think the league has just gotten so much better, and there's a several factors, I think, because of that. I think you're seeing the best players from high school baseball going to college instead of the pro. And then, obviously, in college, for the most part, you stick around for 2 or 3 years. You're getting some older college baseball players, because the minor league or the major league baseball draft has been shrunken down to 20 rounds. So it's just the quality of baseball has improved. So when you get through this 30 game schedule, it's been such a grind. It's probably good from the coach's perspective. You know what? Let's not overtax ourselves in the SEC tournament, because the following week is the regionals, and that's what really matters, not what the SEC tournament is. So, for this year, if LSU holds as the number 2 or 3 seed like they would be right now, they would actually not play until Friday, and it would be single elimination. So if they lost in that game on Friday, that's it. They're done. They get ready for the regionals. Of course, if they win, they keep advancing, and the maximum number of games they would play is 3, and I would imagine Jay Johnson is probably okay with that, not having to tax his team in the SEC tournament. In the tournament, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't mean as much or nearly as much as obviously what will happen in the NCAA tournament.
Thank you, Jeff. Pleasure as always. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. We have been talking a long time about the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion from the Plaquemines Parish angle, from the coastal restoration angle, from the ecological angle, from the fisherman's angle. We're going to spend an hour talking about it when we come back. Gordon Double, kick it off. He's the chairman of the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority. Then we'll talk with Simone Malaz, the campaign director for Restore the Mississippi River Delta. Different sides of the issue completely. We'll get both sides and ask our questions. You have any? The Oakland Art Jeweler text line's open, 504-260-1870. You text them in, I'll ask them when we come back on WWL.